You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today, we're in Lac de Payolle.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. Here I am with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
Where are we, Lionel?
We're at Payolle in the Pyrenees. Beautiful spot, isn't it? Surrounded by the mountains here. A bit of low cloud, a bit of forest over there. The whole Tour de France paraphernalia set up.
What on earth is that, Lionel, up there? Look, on that slope in the forest, there's a strangely illuminated edifice, flashing lights, just right in the middle of the trees. What is it?
Looks like UFOs. Have the aliens arrived?
I think it is a UFO, you know. That's the only explanation. We were driving through the Pyrenees today. You know, we're in the mountains now, and we were both remarking on just how beautiful they are. It's a bit of a cliche, isn't it? But they're very conical mountains. I say that every year. But they are. It is beautiful. It's very different to the Alps.
It is, yeah. It's less developed. The roads are narrower. The countryside is greener. I personally enjoy the Pyrenees more than the Alps. I think they're closer together, aren't they? The iconic climbs are all in quite a close proximity to one another. And the Aspen is a lovely climb, which they're actually on at the moment, Richard. We should be paying attention to the big screen in front of us, because Warren Barguil is on the attack.
From the whimsical flâneur is on the attack. The whimsical flâneur. We've just arrived here, Lionel. There are 15 kilometres of the race to go. It's been an action-packed stage, very fast stage by the sounds of things. Greg Van Avermaet, the yellow jersey, on the attack. Steve Cummings on the attack. Vincenzo Nibali, obviously doing a great job helping Fabio Aru by attacking.
Yeah, well, 15 kilometres to go for Steve Cummings of Dimension Data, out on his own at the moment, just ahead of a group that's got Nibali in it. In fact, Nibali is leading the chase of Cummings. And
Nibali's really going for it, isn't he? I mean, look at him. He's really flat out. I don't know what the gap is to Cummings. We're just catching up with the stage now, but Cummings has been on fire all year. He's won 3 World Tour stages, I think. Tour of the Basque Country, Tirreno Adriatico, and the Critérium du Dauphiné. He's won stages in those 3 World Tour races. Really phenomenal. Want to do a proper feature on him during this tour, because he's having an Indian summer in his career. He's 35 years old now. And this is another great effort by him. And we're doing this as live, this podcast, so no tale of the attack. The story of the attack will unfold over the next 25 minutes or so.
We're living it. This is the tale of the attack.
Living the attack. One thing we've not talked about yet on the podcast is the discord in Team Tinkoff. The rumours of not being a very united team. They've got Peter Sagan, of course, and riding well, probably riding into the green jersey, if not today, then over the next couple of days. But Alberto Contador, obviously having had 2 crashes, has not been in great form. Roman Kreuziger, his teammate, there was a picture snapped the other day, wasn't there, where Contador was dropping off the back, Kreuziger was looking back. It was clear, well, as happened in the stage, he didn't drop back to help him.
Yeah, that's right. That was the stage to Lilleurin in the Massif Central, where Contador was in a bit of difficulty on the climb. And that photo that got circulated, it's a cracking picture. It's the back of Alberto Contador. You can see his race numbers. It's clearly him, and he's losing contact with the group of favourites, and his teammate Roman Kreuziger is looking over his shoulder and clearly clocking that Contador is off the back. And Kreuziger didn't wait for his team leader, and that's caused a bit of consternation in the Tinkoff camp. I bumped into Sean Yates this morning. He was leaning on the bonnet of the team car, and I just said to Sean Yates, has Kreuziger been on the naughty step the last couple of days? And Sean Yates said, well, It's all been dealt with now. They're adults. It's all been talked out. We've put it to bed. We've moved on, which is the answer you would expect. But a couple of days ago, I made a kilometre zero on the role of sports directors, and I asked Sean Yates in that how he deals with any kind of friction or dissent in the camp or when a rider doesn't follow an instruction, because clearly Kreuziger's job on that day would be to wait for Alberto Contador. No matter what he feels about Contador's condition or his likely prospects going on into the tour, Kreuziger's job is to wait for Contador. Anyway, I said to Sean, the photograph didn't help, did it? And he said, no, it didn't, in a very blunt way. And so clearly they've had a tricky 48 hours because, Richard, you made the very good point when we were chatting about this, that the problem with Tinkoff is the team is ending, or we're led to believe the team is definitely ending. And so it's very hard to join nine guys together when they're all out of contract and they're all looking to negotiate the best possible deal for next year. Kreuziger, you know, what's the incentive for him to work for Contador in the short term when his medium or long term prospects might not be so secure?
Absolutely, and there's a really interesting contrast with Team Bora, who are stepping up over the next 3 years at least, up to World Tour. They've been riding fantastically well at this tour. They were pretty anonymous last year. There's been a real change in their performance this year. Across the board, they've had guys in the breaks every day. Those guys are riding for their future on that team, a team with a very exciting, very bright future. Guys on Tinkoff are riding for no future on that team at all. And, you know, that's why it's always a mistake in sport to make these announcements far. It's a fair thing to do, to give people plenty of notice that there's no future for the team, but it's the worst thing for in terms of getting good performances out of these guys. So, you know, that I think that I also made the comment, Lionel, that, you know, they're riding very much like a team that doesn't have a future, but that the bus serves as a metaphor for Tinkoff. Their bus broke down a few days ago. They're driving around in a rented bus, and yeah, that might be a minor matter, but all these buses are kitted out for the riders. You know, the Team Sky bus has only 9 seats on it, all leather reclining seats, and the transfers are quite long. And Tinkoff here are now in a bus, just a standard bus with rows of seats, you know, like an old school bus.
Yeah, and I mean, their itinerary over the next few days is really interesting. They've got wine tasting, they've got a couple of chateau visits, they're on a tourist trip for the next few days. But
I wonder if they always sit in the same seats like you used to do on school trips, and you got on the school bus and you always sat in the same seat, didn't you?
Yeah, oh, it's like that TV programme where the coach trip go on holiday and they vote somebody off every day. Maybe they'll do that to Kreuziger this week. But just a serious point, there's another couple of stories brewing here on the race today, because Steve Cummings has been left out of the Great Britain Olympic road race team, and when he's on a day like this, you wonder about that decision, really, don't you? What's your take on that, Rich?
I can see both sides of this argument. I mean, he'd be a long shot, a wild card for a win. And do you go there with somebody who is such a wild card, or do you put all your eggs in one basket? And I think Chris Froome is a decent, you know, guy to back in the Olympic road race on such a hard course. They're taking Adam Yates as well, who might be a better wild card to play. It's a really tricky one. You couldn't, I don't think, take both Adam Yates and Steve Cummings, perhaps. I don't know, it's tricky, but I can absolutely see Steve Cummings' point of view, that somebody like Peter Kennick, for example, has been selected, having not raced much because he's been out with injury. And, you know, Peter, I think Cummings has made the point that Rod Ellingworth, who selects the team, is also employed by Team Sky. The team for the Olympic road race for Great Britain is mainly Team Sky riders. Is that a conflict of interest? Or is Peter Kennick, as a Team Sky rider, more likely to do a good job for his Team Sky teammate, Chris Froome?
The other big story I want to ask you about here, Rich, is Vincenzo Nibali being up the road. That's really interesting. I mean, the knee-jerk reaction is to suggest that this is bad for harmonious relations between Nibali and Fabio Aru, his teammate. But that might not actually be the case. This may actually be planned. We'll have to see what comes out in the wash. But Nibali is regaining quite a chunk of the time that he lost the other day. And
well, really, he's like 6 or 7 minutes, wasn't it? He lost 7 minutes.
Yeah, and at the moment, he's gaining back 3.5 of that. So you never know. I mean, there's still a
Giro all over again.
There's still a long way to go to the top of the climb. Nibali is going very well. They've got to get organised behind. You just never know. I mean, it could be that they get a stage win. It could be that they shunt Nibali back up the list overall. And I think the the thing about having Nibali and Aru kind of separated on GC but close enough to, for Nibali to be a danger, you know, that's, that becomes a different kind of card to play. It doesn't necessarily follow that this is some kind of, if not a stab in the back, then a stab in the side.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
And now, Pedaleur de Charme.
Thank you very much to Eurosport for sponsoring the cycling podcast along with Rafa, and Eurosport sponsor our daily Pedaleur de Charme award. We're still at the finish of the stage 7, watching the race unfold, and we'll continue with our As Live podcast. But Pedaleur de Charme, well, we'll maybe return at the end to the winner of today's Pedaleur de Charme. But the winner of yesterday's Pedaleur de Charme was Sam Bennett, one of a small sort of gaggle of riders who have been pretty beaten up through crashes and are really just surviving in this tour. And one of the subplots, the stories that we want to follow today, is we want to wait up here until those guys come across. Michael Mercou is one of them as well. He was our Pedaleur de Charme the other day. But I met Sam Bennett this morning at the start and presented him with his Pedaleur de Charme t-shirt, and here's what he had to say. How are things? Now, there are a few of you who are kind of struggling. We're on the you know, the edge of the Pyrenees here. How are you looking at the next few days and today as well?
I think it's going to be difficult, and I just have to stay strong. Just not give up too easy. Just have to keep going. The next few days, I know, like, the rest day is coming up soon enough, and hopefully then the body will start returning to normal. And then, like, it's difficult watching each day the guys like fighting it out for a bunch of sprint, and I want to be there, and I know I can be there. It's another year where I'm at the back of the peloton, and that's what people see.
There's a couple of you who are quite badly knocked up, Michael Morkov as well. Do you help each other a bit? Do you speak to each other during the stages a lot?
Yeah, we do, and we also ask, like, what our game plan is in the final, if there's a climb or whatever, so we're stronger in numbers. And
does it forge quite a bond between you? You know, do you look out for each other, help each other a little bit?
Yeah, I think it does. I was actually really amazed at how nice everybody was, especially stage two, and like so many guys were helping me out in the peloton, and even, like, I know shouldn't be getting help in the cavalcade, but getting a little bit like back up into gruppettos and stuff by other teams. Like, everybody's saying, I'm not getting dropped because I'm a bad rider, I'm just getting dropped because of injuries. If I didn't have the work done and I was getting dropped, yeah, for sure you wouldn't give me a dig out.
We saw a picture of Greg Henderson giving a couple of you a push. He won Pedaleur de Charme for that, actually. But is that quite common? Are there other guys as well who are giving you a push?
Yeah, that day there was. But that day, like, I was dead. Like, the impact hit the body hard. It had been really nice. I was really surprised.
What just happened, Lionel?
Well, what just happened is that the Nibali group that's chasing Steve Cummings to the top of the Col d'Aspin has broken up. Danny Navarro of Cofidis accelerated and has a little gap. Daryl Impey is trying to respond, and Nibali has not responded or is unable to respond. So it's all kicking off on the Col d'Aspin. Steve Cummings is going to go over the top first, and then it's the descent down and then a slight rise up here to Paol. The other big development is that Thibaut Pinot has lost contact with the group of favourites. He's being nursed up the climb by his Frances Desjeux teammate Steve Morabito, and we keep seeing a little shot of a Thibaut Pinot fan with his sign Allez Thibaut Pinot, and he's going to have a slightly disappointing moment when he sees his hero come past just off the back of the group.
At least he should get a good look at him. Oh dear, poor old Thibaut Pinot. It's great things expected of him at this tour, and he seems to, I can't remember if it's odd years or even years, he performs, 2014 he performed very well, so he should be performing well this year, because he had a bit of a terrible week in the first week last year. So it's not the old Stephen Roach used to be even years and odd years, he'd perform well in odd years. It's all quite interesting. Nothing too much, it's all very controlled in the group with the favourites, which makes it all the more surprising that Pinot has been dropped. But Steve Cummings looking good for this win. I'd just been saying, hadn't I, that what an exciting rider Nibali is to watch when he got dropped, and you laughed.
Well, I did, but exciting because he's so unpredictable, isn't he? He's not very reliable. We saw that in the Giro. He was terrible, and then he was very good, and then he was wobbly, and then he was excellent. And, you know, this tour, we didn't know what to expect. He'd been playing down any talk of challenging overall. Clearly that is the case. It's whether he can slot into being a teammate for Aru, and he's clearly not got the legs.
Meanwhile, I think Cummings is going to win the stage. Still a bit of a way to go. Lionel, I'm worried about your head. It's very sunny up here.
It is. I'm going to step into the shade in a minute, otherwise it could be gleaming like a Belisha beacon later on.
That flashing object I saw earlier in the woods. Anyone standing over there might well be looking across here and wondering what the big flashing dome is, the big sort of white, pinky white dome.
Increasingly pink dome, yes.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa. Whoever you are, wherever you ride, whatever the reason, Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories, and vibrant clubhouses and communities all over the world. See rafa.cc for more information.
I must say, just at the start of this session, thank you very much indeed to our sponsors, Rafa, who I'm wearing a Rafa t-shirt today. I got quite a welcome, didn't I, from the ASO steward, normally very stern-faced and serious, but he gave me quite a welcome when I came through the security there.
He did. He said, "Ah, Rafa," like that. And I was like, oh my goodness, Richard. I mean, you know, you're not. You're going to be greeted with a blast of the Buffalo tune now.
What have I become? But thank you very much to Rafa. We are doing a little weekly thing for the Rafa Cycling Club members. That will go out on the rest day. It'll just be Lionel and I talking over the week. We've also got on the rest day your. Oh, that's a bit of. Oh, brilliant bit of. Is that Julien Alaphilippe? Yeah, attacking right behind the motorbike, doing a bit of motor pace training there. I was going to mention your friend special coming out on Monday on Mont Ventoux. Lots of great stuff in that. Lots to look forward to. Let's keep on watching the stage unfold. Lionel, we'll be back in a moment. Lionel, as we watch Julien Alaphilippe attack here, having appeared to be struggling on the climbs the other day, one man very much in my thoughts is Seb Piquet.
Well, yeah, he's maybe made a very bold claim that he might come to regret. Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour, becoming a regular guest on the podcast, said that he would walk to Paris naked if Alaphilippe won the Tour. He did specify this year, so it's not like, you know, an indefinite threat hanging over him. I just want to know how far from Paris Seb will walk. Is he going to walk from Morzine to Paris?
I think that's, yeah, definitely. I mean, that should take several days. You can, we'll look it up on Google Maps. It always gives you a walking time, doesn't it? 3 weeks. No, Alaphilippe, I don't know why he's attacking, to be perfectly honest. Oh, he's got a chance of taking the yellow jersey, perhaps?
Well, no, because Van Avermaet is right
Van Avermaet's up there. Van Avermaet's coming back a bit, maybe. There's still a chance they might be able to catch him, perhaps. Although Van Avermaet, we're watching him going over the summit, not really too. Alaphilippe must only be a minute or so behind Van Avermaet.
Yeah, but he's going to obviously lose a bit more time. I mean, Van Avermaet's move is clever, really, because it gives them a better chance of perhaps keeping the jersey and one more day than he ordinarily would. He could have lost a bit of time on this stage. You know, if he got dropped from this group, he could have lost a minute, 2 minutes maybe on the way to the top. It would have been a very different race for him. But by going out in front, he's given himself a buffer, a bit of insulation, and he might fancy chances of taking the jersey on to Sunday.
Giving himself a buffalo, did you say? I wasn't listening properly there. Speaking of Greg Van Avermaet, we got a very amusing email from Stephen Underdown overnight. Subject is Greg Banana Man. He says, "My wife Mary overheard some of the podcast yesterday. Greg Banana Man, that's a good name," she said. "Mary's keen on anything food related," says Stephen. "Best wishes, keep up the good work." Thanks very much for that, Stephen.
Well, while you're reading out that email there, Dan Martin has just accelerated over the top, gained a few metres.
Chasing down Alaphilippe.
Well, you know, working in tandem perhaps to go down the other side. I mean, it's a funny stage.
Yeah, we forgot about Warren Barguil, the whimsical flaneur, is still up there. He's ridden most of the Aspen on his own.
Indeed he has, yeah, and Steve Cummings is closing in on victory here. 3.3 kilometres to go for Cummings. It's a case of just getting down the mountain, I think. Don't want to call it too soon, but this victory looks in the bag.
We didn't call it too soon, Lionel. Steve Cummings is indeed going to do it. What a rider, and what a week for Dimension Data.
a fantastic week for Dimension Data. Three stage wins for Mark Cavendish, a day in the yellow jersey for Mark Cavendish, the green jersey currently with Mark Cavendish, now a stage win for Cummings. And I would say this is even more impressive than his win at Mond last year, when he outfoxed the two Frenchmen, Romain Bardet and Thibaut Pinot, with a really cunning move. He's plotted this one out in a very different way. He's made his move, he's calculated his effort, and let's not underestimate the power of the group behind him. Danny Navarro, Daryl Impey, who's held the yellow jersey before, Vincenzo Nibali, is quite an impressive group to get away from and stay away from.
Very impressive indeed. Very good for our sponsor of Kilometre Zero as well, because I have mentioned before, Steve Cummings' bottom is a particularly viable space, and there on his bottom watching now is Niederberg Wine, who sponsor our daily Kilometre Zero series. This is the greatest win of his career, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, I would say so. I mean, to win a stage in the Pyrenees over the Col d'Aspin, that's, you know, that it's not a sort of 5 or 6 col monster, but it's, yeah, it's impressive.
Very funny, we're watching on the big screen here, and of course you can be confused by this because there's a delay on the TV coverage behind us while we're watching this. Steve Cummings is going to appear any second.
He is. He'll probably pass us as he passes.
I think he's passed.
No, he hasn't. He'll pass us here a couple of hundred metres after the line, roughly when he crosses the line on television.
Yep, here he comes. Well, here he comes on the television, and there he is. In real life.
Well, interesting point that, really, because Brian Holm made the point in the Sports Director's Kilometre Zero that the TVs the sports directors are watching in the car aren't live. They're like on a 30-second or minute delay, simply because the TV pictures are not absolutely live. What you see on television is not happening at that very second. So the idea that the sports directors can react immediately and influence the race in that sense is a bit of a misnomer.
Ciao.
Ciro Scognamelio, how are you, my friend?
Not bad, Richard, and you?
And your favourite terrain here in the mountains?
I mean, in these mountains, listeners, it's not the thing that I have in my mind now. And tonight, I will post you another clear image of what I have in my mind. And not the shark that is arriving, I don't care, really. No.
Impressive win by Steve Cummings.
If I'm not wrong, it's the fourth win by him this year. Every race he won in a World Tour race. So really an excellent level.
Wow, well, there's a bit of excitement now because the Flamme Rouge, the big inflatable arch, has collapsed on the riders in the leaders group, in the front group, as they go through it. Lionel, what just happened? Do you see that?
Well, the big Vittel inflatable that goes over the 1 kilometre to go seemed to have collapsed on one side, and
I just said that it just landed on all the riders, and it's held a few of them up.
It has held them up, yeah. I mean, that's we do see these things collapse sometimes.
Not at the Tour de France, though, really.
No,
I mean,
saw at the Giro a couple of them sort of looking less than secure, but normally they do such a good job of keeping all of those. And it's interesting, the TV director hasn't gone back to that.
It's had a puncture.
So now this group is just riding in.
Well, it looks like they are just riding in, as if, you know, there's an agreement here not to take advantage of this. The 3 kilometre rule, of course, doesn't apply in the mountains, does it? I mean, does it?
Don't think it does, no.
I don't think it does. I mean, so anyone held up by that is going to lose time here.
Yeah, there's a Cannondale rider sprinting to get back on. I don't think that's Pierre.
No, Pierre Roland is there. I can see Roland there.
Inside as we look. So, yeah, they're just rolling over the line. Sensible, really. I mean,
Contador's there.
Yeah, sensible. That's a freak incident, and nobody should profit or lose from that, really.
And Nibali wasn't there to attack.
Yeah, you just imagine, can't you, him getting through on the right hand side and putting his head down and going for it.
Oh, maybe holding onto a car on his way.
Oh, I didn't see it, he says.
Well, Lionel, at the finish there, we both scurried off to speak to different people, and I think we're going to hear from Geraint Thomas, Matt White, maybe a couple of others as well. I caught up briefly with Seb Piquet. But the man that everybody wanted to speak to was, of course, the winner of the stage, Steve Cummings. And I grabbed him at the finish. Here he is.
Pretty good, pretty tired. I don't know. You know, I came, I really needed a win. I didn't want a win, I needed a win. And I haven't felt super so far in the race. And I never really do on those sprint stages. It's not my thing, but it's been good. Well, great having the guys around. They've kept the morale super high, and I thought I'd missed the break, and then Etics pulled and managed to get back in the race, and then played my card in the final as well as I could, I think. You know, when the ball's rolling, success breeds success, and kind of takes the pressure off, but it's still like you want personal excellence and you want to deliver. I think this is what they brought me to the tour for, so I wanted to deliver for them and for Quebec. And
Steve, you've won a stage of the tour before, but is this your, you got to enjoy it today and celebrate it, is this your greatest ever win?
Possibly, yeah, I think probably. The tour, it's always multiplied so many times more than any other race. Every win as a pro is important because they're not easy, and every victory I've had this year is kind of different, like different characteristics. I guess this one was similar to Dauphiné in a way. It's what I dreamed of as a kid, winning from a breakaway, and I don't know, I love these stages. It's what I'm passionate about.
Clever use of road furniture when you launch your winning move.
Did I? I didn't even notice that. It's just probably automatic. Yeah, I don't know. I just feel things and look at riders and sensations, and you know, I go a lot on feel and don't use the radio too much. Just go.
So we heard there from Steve Cummings. You know, he's an understated sort of guy, but obviously very happy. I spoke to Cummings' teammate actually at the finish, Reinhard Jansen van Rensburg, the South African. We'll hear from him in a future episode, I think. But he said they were trying to get through the Niederberg sparkling wine with all these victories. He did actually say that. He also said Steve Cummings is a rider who could, if his career had panned out a bit differently, be going for GC. You know, he's that good. He just doesn't like getting involved in the battle in the bunch, and that's why he rides at the back all the time. But he picks his days, and really, he's got a great strike rate, hasn't he? So he was very happy. Just a little clarification in our regular corrections and clarifications column: when Julien Alaphilippe attacked, I suggested that he might be trying to get the yellow jersey. He is, of course, still a long way behind Van Avermaet. He's still 6.5 minutes down, so that was maybe a bit optimistic of me.
Well, I did try to kind of play that down. I mean,
you did.
Yeah. Just to set the scene here, the cloud has come down quite a bit here at Lac de Payolle. We're in the traditional Tour de France traffic jam. Whenever the race reaches the mountains, it's often takes a long time to get away from the finish. We've just joined the queue of cars trying to get out of the car park here. So we're digesting what was an interesting stage in the Pyrenees, but really it was that incident with a kilometre to go with the huge inflatable Vittel Flamme Rouge collapsing at just the wrong moment. And when we watched that live, I did sort of make light of it because it's such a freak incident, but a couple of riders come off pretty badly from that incident. The worst affected appears to be Adam Yates, a British rider with Orica Greenedge, and I
Orica Bike Exchange.
Well done Richard, like having a goalkeeper here. That was a lazy back pass to the keeper.
You can keep your eye on GC and I'll get the team names right, mention the sponsors from time to time.
Yeah. Okay, well I ran down to the Orica Bike Exchange bus, and Brian Niegaard, the press communications manager, asked, have you seen Adam? And I'd expected him to have come in with that group because all of the favourites very quickly made the decision not to, not to sprint off once they got back on their feet or got untangled from the banner. And Adam Yates hadn't crossed the line. He, in fact, crossed the line over 4 minutes behind that group of Froome and Thomas and all the rest of them. And when Yates arrived back at the team bus, he threw his bike against the side of the bus, straight up the stairs and in, and he had quite a lot of blood on his chin, dripping from his chin. Didn't look in great spirits, understandably. And when the Orica Bike Exchange team car pulled up, Matt White got out, slammed the door, stomped onto the bus, and then came out, and I grabbed a quick word with him.
You looked annoyed there, and understandably so. Talk me through that from your perspective.
Yeah, look, it was a sensational ride from Daryl today. It certainly wasn't planned for anyone to go in a small breakaway, but when we saw the numbers that we did going up the road, it was always good to pop someone in there. So you won't see too many lead-out guys in the world finishing second on a mountain stage, and Daryl had an incredible ride.
But then the incident with the Vittel banner coming down with a kilometre to go, and Adam Yates looks like he's one of the ones who's come off worse there.
Yeah, look, it's pretty disappointing and obviously pretty unacceptable for an event of this standard. Adam would have taken the white jersey today, but we've got to put things into perspective. The number one priority that Adam is okay. He's landed on his face, and the result's one thing, but fingers crossed Adam can back up tomorrow because he's certainly got some great condition.
What's the extent of his injury? I saw he's quite a bit of blood.
Look, mate, I've seen him 30 seconds. I'm not a doctor, and he's landed on his face and he's hurt himself. I don't know. He's in the shower now getting cleaned up, so we'll see.
Matt White there, not, it didn't sound, I mean, he's usually pretty chipper, but not very happy. I feel a bit sorry for the guy, whoever he'll be boxing with tomorrow morning.
Indeed, yeah. I mean, the jury has now confirmed that the time for those riders was taken at 3 kilometres to go, so Adam Yates won't lose 4 minutes on everybody else. But White clearly felt that Yates was going to make a move in that final kilometres and try and gain a few seconds on the riders ahead of him in the white jersey competition. Of course, Alaphilippe holds on to that white jersey. So a bit of an embarrassing incident there for the Tour, because you don't expect something like that to happen. We have seen incidents with these huge inflatables that are put up for advertising purposes, aren't they? So they look bigger on TV. But, you know, the job number one is for them to stay up when the riders pass.
Well, I asked Seb Piquet about it, and he, you know, he drives in the car just behind the favourites. He said that he saw a lot of Thibaut Pinot today, sadly. He suggested it was sabotaging. He was sort of joking, but it's not beyond the realms of possibility that it was a case of sabotage. I mean, it's a big inflatable thing. It wouldn't be too difficult to puncture that. Who knows? Maybe that's a bit of a cynical view, but we'll probably find out in the fullness of time. We should return briefly to Pedlar de Charme while I remember, because had a few nominations. An awful lot of people just went for Steve Cummings. Winning the stage and riding brilliantly as he did, that's not really enough to win Pedlar de Charme. It's on a higher plane. So I think we will give it to somebody else who received a lot of nominations today, and that was Greg Van Avermaet, who was in the attack on the yellow jersey, which is always good to see. But more, even better to see, was that when he took a rice cake from his pocket and unwrapped it, he returned the foil to his pocket. And that's the sort of thing that wins Pedlar de Charme. We might struggle to give him a T-shirt while he's still in the yellow jersey. And incidentally, I heard him in the mix zone dealing with French television, where he said absolutely he will not have the yellow jersey tomorrow night. He doesn't think so. Because a few people were saying, well, a rider of his class and his strength, could we be looking at a sort of similar situation to Tommy Voeckler when he held the yellow jersey so long in 2004 and also in 2011? But he doesn't think so, unless he's bluffing. So maybe in a couple of days we'll get him a Pedlar de Charme T-shirt. I spoke to Geraint Thomas at the finish as well. Here's what Geraint Thomas had to say. Pretty bizarre incident there. What happened when the kilometre sign collapsed?
Well, it just collapsed and we had to stop. So then once we rolled through, you know, we just said, you know, stop, you know, that's it. Then we heard on the radio then they're going to take time after 3K, so, yeah.
Okay. How are you? Because you've been struggling a little bit with your ribs. How are you feeling?
Yeah, certainly better every day. Still got, you know, a lot of strapping on it, and every morning and afternoon the physio's getting stuck inside the diaphragm, which isn't nice. I thought he liked me, but I don't think he does. It's certainly better every day.
And today was it? I mean, there was a break with Nibali in it. Did that cause a little bit of panic or anxiety?
I wouldn't say panic, but I was certainly concerned. We didn't want to just give him a load of minutes back, and just let him back into the game. We just, same position as Movistar, really, just wanted to control it. And then, on the final climb, the bunch is just naturally going to go fast anyway and, you know, limit the amount of time he's got.
So that was Geraint Thomas. While we're hearing from riders, I did also catch up very briefly with Sam Bennett, who's heard from earlier in this episode, just to find out how he'd gone today. There was a bit of an alarm because he had a very bloody wound in his arm, and I thought he'd fallen off again. When I asked him that, he looked shocked, as if he might have fallen off and not realised it. Anyway, here was Sam Bennett. How was today? Have you fallen off again today?
No, I didn't.
No, I just saw quite a fresh looking wound, but that's an old wound that's just had sweat run into it.
Yeah.
You looked alarmed there when I said that, as if you'd maybe fallen off and not realised.
Yeah, no, it's okay today, actually. I felt a good bit better. But, we went pretty easy on the last climb. And it's still, like, I don't feel myself. So tomorrow is just going to be a real test. I think, like, if I improve this much today, hopefully I can improve another good bit by tomorrow. And then hopefully it's controlled enough, then we'll see.
As we sit in our traffic jam here, refreshing the internet to see the official results.
Burning through data,
yeah.
EE, if you're listening and you want to sponsor the cycling podcast, that would be quite useful.
We must be among your best customers this month. The results don't yet reflect the time being given back to Adam Yates, but we fully expect that to happen. One man who won't be getting any time given back to him is Thibaut Pinot, who was off the back before the top of the Col d'Aspin and didn't recover any time on the way down. And I'm just scrolling.
It wasn't Marc Madio who punctured the kilometre to go banner, was it?
No, well, I'm just scrolling down. I have to scroll quite a long way through the results to find poor old Thibaut Pinot. 62nd on the stage, at 7:15 behind the winner, which of course makes nearly 3 minutes or three and a quarter minutes behind the Froome Quintana group. So a shocker of a day for Thibaut Pinot. And we did say, despite how benign this stage looked on paper and how benignly it was raced, really, we did say yesterday that somebody would lose out, somebody would slip up, and it is Thibaut Pinot who is the kind of the first GC casualty, I suppose, other than Richie Port. Another man who crossed the line, to the relief of a lot of people out there, I expect, Michael Mirku, the Katusha.
Mirku.
The Danish rider, Katusha rider, Pedaleur de Charme a couple of days ago, part of the Band of Brothers. I was expecting the Band of Brothers maybe to stick together today, but they all rode in different groups. Sam Bennett did pretty well. Lars Back was quite near the back, and Michael Mirku was last over the line, 26 and something minutes behind Steve Cummings, but inside the time limit. And apparently, he said to Danish TV, he's starting to feel better, and he's now confident he can make it through the Pyrenees. So if that's the case, that's good news. It doesn't necessarily follow that because he's 26 minutes behind and off the back on his own, that he was suffering unduly. I mean, obviously it will have been a tough day for him, but it doesn't mean he was necessarily pulling out all the stops. He could just have been calculating that he knew what he could afford to lose, give himself an easy-ish ride over the top of the Aspin.
Right, well, let's wrap it up. We're almost at the end of the first week of the Tour de France. We take a break from Kilometre Zero over the weekend, but we'll return with another installment of Kilometre Zero on Monday. Today's was the political cycle, which linked up Donald Trump, the EU, and something else.
Well, the EU and Brexit. And
Brexit, how could I forget? That seems a long time ago now.
Yeah, and the Tour de France. Yeah, with Trump. What connects Trump, the EU, Brexit and the Tour de France? I mean, you'll have to listen to find out.
Quality journalism, Lionel. It's one of your efforts, that, Kilometre Zero. Excellent stuff. And we've got lots of good ones planned for next week. So thank you very much to everybody who's been listening. Thank you to our sponsors, Rafa and Eurosport. Thank you to Niederberg Wines, who sponsored Kilometre Zero. Thank you to our team of producers. End of the week, we should thank all of our producers. That's Tom Wally,
John Mooney,
Adam Bowie,
Paul Scoynes,
Jonathan Rowe, and Alex Adey. Thank you very much to them. They do a brilliant job and help us keep this thing going. Nick Christian as well, who does our newsletter. Thank you to him.
And of course, mustn't forget Simon Gill, our photographer and travelling companion and the Thierry Gouvenou of the Cycling Podcast, in that he designs the stages for our Cycling Podcast tour, which Richard and I were riding, aren't we, on our Leos.
Great ride this morning. Leos Nano Carbon Folding Bikes. And we had a great ride this morning.
We did. Longest stage of the race so far. Nice, quiet, flat roads. Yeah, we've been enjoying that. It's keeping us active, helping us to work off the cheese that I've been eating.
Well, not really, I think. We'd have to do quite a bit more riding for that. Must also thank Tom Carey, who from the Telegraph cycling correspondent, who has been our travelling companion and that he's been great company. Thank you also to John McCleary at the Telegraph. John McCleary does the best live blog every day at telegraph.co.uk. He really knows the cycling, John, and it's really entertaining, informative, lots of tidbits in there. So if you want to follow the race during the day as it's unfolding, telegraph.co.uk.
No music to play us out with tonight, is there, unfortunately? Maybe anyone out there wants to send in some cycling podcast themed music.
A napalm theme tune, perhaps. So that we should wrap it up there, Lionel. We're a weekend. The tour is just bubbling away. It's slowly coming to a boil, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Our colleague Edward Pickering sent me a text today summing up the first week, saying it was like the sort of opening partnership in a test match. You know, sort of steady as she goes, no wickets down yet. But
what's a test match?
A cricket. It's a game that.
It's like rounders.
It's a bit better than rounders, Richard. It's not big in Scotland because I think it rains all summer, doesn't it? They can't get out to play.
Well, Lionel, we're driving home, and there's some breaking news.
Home? Is Poe our... Well, I suppose it is our home for the evening, isn't it, Poe? Yeah, there is some breaking news. Matt White had been confident that Adam Yates would be able to take the white jersey. Then the barrier collapsed, the banner collapsed, and he lost a lot of time. They reinstated that time, and it puts Britain's Adam Yates in the white jersey.
Yates in the white jersey.